I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
An extensive study conducted by Oxnard to test residents in New Orleans and Jefferson Parish and more accurately trace the infection rate of COVID-19 in this area found that at least 64,000 more people likely have had the coronavirus than previously thought. Dr. Amy Feehan, Oxnard research scientist, joins us to talk about this study and what it means to us. Dr. Feehan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So I think a lot of people kind of were a little bit taken aback by this, obviously. And so what does this mean? Is this something that was very alarming or not so much alarming? Or exactly what does it mean that we found so many folks that we probably didn't know about that have been infected?
Yeah, so studies like this have been conducted all around the world, and typically this is what they're finding. So obviously our testing has been really limited since the beginning of the outbreak. And focused primarily on people who had certain sets of symptoms or were hospitalized. So this was our first chance to really look at the greater population, and that allowed us to, you know, look at people who maybe weren't completely symptomatic, and we actually found a really high rate of asymptomatic infection in our population. So I would say that there were a lot of things that were alarming to me as well and surprising to me, but the idea that there are more infections out there than we were detecting with testing, that's not really too surprising based on what other people have found.
So at the end of the day, what does this mean to the constituents of Orleans and Jefferson Parish? Obviously, the numbers are greater. Is it good that we have people that are asymptomatic that really don't end up with any symptoms? Do we interpret this exactly?
Yeah, so we found, first of all, that the people in that first stage of disease, right after they had caught the virus, before they had started developing antibodies, 75% of those people were asymptomatic. And yet, you're right, you might think right away that asymptomatic means that you're better off in the long run, but actually some studies are showing that even people who don't have severe symptoms can end up with long-term consequences. So the research on that is kind of coming out slowly. But the other part is you might feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, not social distancing or chatting with your neighbor if they don't look like they're really sick. So it actually represents kind of a risk because if most of the people who are the most infectious don't show symptoms, then you might be letting your guard down around people who are actually infected and could be spreading that virus.
So when we view this through the context or the lens of wearing a mask, it would seem to me then wearing a mask would be even of heightened importance if you have 75% of the folks that y'all looked at were asymptomatic, and that's when they're the most infectious, was early onset of the disease.
Definitely. And there's there's a subset, too, that are probably something called pre-symptomatic, meaning they have the virus, they're spreading it, but they just haven't had symptoms yet. So some of those people might go on to have symptoms, but there's definitely a window where you're infectious and you could have absolutely no idea. So, you know, if you're feeling fine right now, that doesn't tell you whether or not you have the virus. And so I think that really reinforces the fact that just everybody should be wearing masks because you don't want to be, you know, unwittingly spreading this to people. I think most people would reasonably wear a mask if they were coughing and having symptoms, but, you know, maybe if you're feeling fine, why should I bother wearing a mask? And this data really shows us why that's important.
Yeah, you know, for someone like me that suffers with sinuses two or three times a year, right now I'm suffering. It's like everything's in full bloom. You got stuff flying all over the place.
Definitely.
I don't know if I'm in, I'm out. In a perfect world, if I could get tested as often as I would like, what would be the recommendation?
So, yeah, I mean, actually, Dr. Kemmerly, who's an infectious disease doc with Ochsner, we were talking and she brought up a really good point. You know, you can go get your test and you're not infected and you get your swab and then you get your results, you know, a couple of days later saying you're not infected. And on your way out from that appointment, you could interact with somebody who gives you the virus. So really, like, that one point in time test telling you positive or negative doesn't tell you anything a couple days later or a week later. It's really just that one point in time. So, and as you know, testing is not freely available. If you wanted to get tested every single day, you definitely couldn't do that because that would put a strain on an already very strained system. Right. So I think right now, because of supply chain issues, we kind of have to assume that, you know, assume everybody has the virus and then you're going to act accordingly. And that's going to keep you the safest, I think.
So, you know, early on when we talked about all of those below the curve and just trying to elongate the curve in order to not overwhelm the healthcare delivery system, that seemed to be the goal. It seems to me that over a period of time, we've kind of a little bit of lost sight of that. In the context of what the information that you just provided, what do we do? I mean, how long, you know, they're saying that lockdowns are good, they're not good. Now they're saying that this is an airborne. The WHO's come out and said this is possibly airborne. It was on you could get it from your counter. Now it's likely that it's not going to be transmitted that way. I mean, and meanwhile, the whole economy is shut. Not the whole economy, but I mean, we can't. So where are we going? What are we doing? And we have a big argument now over the opening of schools in Germany, Denmark, Sweden, France. All of these countries have had their schools open because they go to school year-round since April and have seen no increase in infection rates in, you know, for
kids.
And
one thing I can say on that comparison, too, is, like, in those places where the schools have remained open, they've also done a lot to bring down community spread. So they are not seeing, you know, thousands of new cases every day in cities across their country. So, you know, that's going to influence whether or not schools, you know, fuel the spread or not. Right now, I don't think we have great control over the situation. There's like kind of this fantastical thinking that schools are somehow protected from spreading the virus. And I don't think that's the case, but I guess it will remain to be seen. What I can say is that I'm glad I'm not the person responsible for, you know, making policy decisions. Hopefully the data that I can provide will help inform those decisions. But at the end of the day, you know, that's up to a public official.
No, I understand that. I think for the benefit of the listening audience, the sense that I get are folks are getting more and more confused.
And, oh, definitely.
And as much reading as I've done on this thing, and I read so many medical periodicals, I don't even want to want to think about it anymore, because the more I read, the more confused I'm getting about so, this, because you embrace one thing and then a week later it's completely entirely different.
And so one thing I can just comment on that broadly is that this virus has existed on Earth for 7 months, and so even if you throw every resource at every research institution around the world, you know, you have variability in how people conduct their studies or which location they're conducting those studies in, or what does the supply chain look like? Because I know early on the CDC or maybe it was the World Health Organization, one of the two said, you know, don't wear a mask. You save that PPE for healthcare providers who really are on the front lines and everybody else stay home. And then now the guidance is everybody should be wearing a mask. And, you know, which level of mask is what should you be wearing? And so I think a lot of this is evolving in response to a lot of different pressures. But as far as the research side, you know, usually people have years to work on different diseases and publish multiple papers and validate things. And right now it's like everybody's scrambling to get information out as fast as possible at as high of a quality as possible. But with that, you know, new information could come along and change the conversation. But I agree, it's definitely confusing messaging. But I think the best thing you can do is, you know, take personal responsibility, cover your face when you're in public, and stay home more often than you're going out and about if you can.
The mortality rate at one point in time was something that we spent a lot of time focusing on. Yeah. As those numbers have improved, you know, as it relates to increased testing, and now statistically we know, and they have improved there. There are those that are now saying that that's not really something that we should be focused on, but we spent a lot of time in the early onset of this disease or virus talking about that.
Yeah, so actually in the studies that we just released, we also calculated something called the infection fatality ratio. And so before, all we could really do was talk about the case fatality ratio, or, you know, how many people have died over the number of cases that we know were confirmed. And like I talked about earlier, those cases that we confirmed were really focused on the people with symptoms who were able to get a test based on those symptoms or who were hospitalized. So like definitely the sicker patients. So by calculating this number of people who are presumed to be infected in the community, which is that 64,000 plus number, and then we take the deaths over that number, we can get kind of a more accurate picture of really per 100 people, what is the likelihood of dying once you've been infected with this disease. So in our study, we found that the infection fatality rate was about 1.63% in our population, which is a little bit higher than other places around the world have found too. And that could do with a number of factors. But I think that's still 10 to 40 times higher than the infection fatality rate for the flu for this last year. And I know that was a huge point of conversation early on, too, was that it's more or less deadly than the flu. And we've kind of found that in our community, it's definitely more deadly than the flu.
This is going to sound like a crazy question, but I got to ask it because I'm having a difficult time connecting these dots. As we move through this, and based on what you guys uncovered in this study, is the importance of the testing actually minimized?
So I would say, you know, to get the best data, you'd be testing as many people as possible all the time. When you're limited on supply chain, you can't do that. I guess maybe I don't understand your question.
Well, I mean, in the context of, okay, we recognize that we're going to have a lot of people floating around that are asymptomatic. You know, and it's just, so how does this run its course? You know, I mean, we're thinking about this, and you said that there were remedial measures that Germany and France and others that have done. And I'm not aware of things that they've done that we've not done here. It's the duration of what they've done as opposed to the duration of what we've done here. I'm not sure. But, you know, when you think about some of the things that are running contrary to, you know, like what the experience in New York, the numbers are going down. Obviously, we've seen protests. We've seen this. We've seen large gatherings. We've seen all kinds of things going on there. A lot of spreader events, super spreader events. But it hasn't revealed itself in the data. And, you know, so that's why I'm wondering, I mean, we're trying to work at breakneck speed to do more testing, but does it really lead to anything different?
So I think on an individual level, if you are asymptomatic, but you have easy access to a test, and you can just kind of go check in and see, you know, maybe there was somebody questionably sick and you're worried about an exposure or something like that, and you can go get a test and then you find out, oh, I do have this. I'm gonna make sure that I'm quarantining, you know, while it runs its course. Then you're not going to infect those next five or six people that you might have infected if you had no idea. So I think in preventing community spread, community testing is helpful. And then also, you know, like that flatten the curve idea, I think Louisiana was on that track, and now we're seeing this explosion in cases.
But we kind of knew that was going to happen, right? I mean, when we began to open up, and that's kind of what has mystified me, is that it's like everybody's walking around, oh, man, I can't believe this is happening. Well, it shouldn't have been a huge surprise because we knew that the moment that we opened up the economy a little bit, and people started moving about more freely, that the infection rate was going to go up. It was just a question of whether or not we were going to overload the healthcare delivery system at that point.
Right. Yeah. So, and I know, too, there have been some large-scale studies just on mobility using, like, mobile phone data. So they can see in a population how much are people moving around or not. And I know with reduced mobility, you get reduced numbers of infections, which makes sense. And, yeah, I think, too, the reopening problem, where do you strike a balance between, like, you know, people can make money and have their jobs back and, you know, do things that they're used to doing, but at the same time, not overwhelming an already very exhausted healthcare system. Because, you know, the nurses and doctors who've been working on this for so long, they haven't gotten a break yet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, when I look at the hospitalization numbers across the state of Louisiana, I think last time I looked, they were in the 700 or 800 range. When I think about the number of beds available throughout the state of Louisiana, that number pales. You know, I know some of the local hospitals. I was talking to a physician the other day at a large local hospital. They had 4 COVID patients. The all-time high they had was 80. And, you know, so when I begin to look at it in the context there, I mean, I see that we have these hot zones, but I'm just curious if we're really looking more intensely at the underlying data before we some folks are making these broad policy statements about our findings of the look-see that they're having at some of this data that is really not there. You know, because when I look at COVID-19 deaths, for example, if you have a positive test, you're carried as a COVID-19 death. Well, that's a flawed reporting system in my view, because you may have all kinds of comorbidity issues and underlying health conditions. And you may have been on your deathbed 2 weeks before, but because you tested positive, it gets reported as a COVID-19 death.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure on how the Department of Health is categorizing those. But I know, too, they definitely separate out the ones that are suspected COVID, who maybe just didn't get a test.
I think we're doing a much better job of it in Louisiana than a lot of other states. There's no doubt about that. I mean, but you know, if one state, and I guess this is really not, I would imagine that you're frustrated by the fragmented approach to this as it, you know, from across the country.
Oh, definitely. It would be great if we had, like, Spain just did a huge seroprevalence study that was 64,000 people across the country with, like, sampling and major cities and out in the country. And so they were able to get a very coherent picture of, like, in our cities versus the countryside, what does this look like?
Right.
And are there any particularly hard-hit areas? And in the research side, at least, you know, there's different methodologies being implemented, so you can't necessarily compare one study to another. And then, you know, it's just like you said, it's whoever has the time, resources, and access to do things like this, people are doing it. And we were very lucky to, you know, have support by a local nonprofit, RENOLA, and Ochsner to do this study. But a lot of places don't have that access. So it would be really cool to have, you know, a broad sweeping study like other countries have done. But yeah, it is definitely frustrating that it's a very fragmented approach. It would be cool to have like one cohesive plan and then attack it from that angle.
Dr. Feehan, thank you so much for joining us. Let me congratulate you guys at Ochsner. I know that y'all put a lot of work into this study.
A lot of hours. Yeah, that's true. And a lot of people. This was hundreds of people who made this happen. And I especially want to thank the subjects who came out. We tested, you know, 2,640 people who showed up for us. So I really appreciate them.
I know Dr. Kimberly, who you talk of. I have a lot of respect for her, and I know that y'all all did a lot of work and a lot of hard work and dedicated work, and we should appreciate that as a community. Thank you so much for joining
us
today.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
All righty. We'll be right back. 260-1870 or text 260-1870. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.